From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A group of parents, friends, and family of LGBT community members is celebrating a decade of promoting equality in Southwest Florida. The group is called PFLAG, Parents, Friends, and Family of Lesbians and Gays, and in just over a week, they'll host their 10th annual interfaith convocation. They call it a way to promote acceptance and ask questions by way of sharing religious traditions and rituals. We'll talk to the founders of the Naples PFLAG group and with a reverend from one of the more than 20 churches and synagogues that are taking part. Plus, it's Arbor Day, and that means more than just planting trees. Here in Southwest Florida, it comes as a great reminder to do routine maintenance on trees ahead of hurricane season. We'll talk with a Naples arborist about all things trees, from hurricane preparedness and wildfire damage to pests and water restrictions. First, the news. Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Arbor Day was first observed in a small town in Spain back in 1594, and to this day, the people there still plant lime and horse chestnut trees. America took up the Arbor Day practice in 1872 when a million trees were planted in Nebraska. Since then, it's become an international day of tree planting, sometimes varying in timing based on climate conditions and suitability for planting. Brazil, Belgium, Egypt, Iran, Kenya, Japan, Poland, Taiwan, these are just a few of the countries that have a day set aside to remind people to plant a tree. Here in the U.S., Arbor Day is celebrated today, the last Friday of April, but some states may change it due to local weather. For example, Alaska observes its Arbor Day in May when the weather is a little more suitable for planting trees. And to mark that occasion here in Southwest Florida, we're talking today with a man who knows his way around the trees of the area, Naples arborist Ian Orlikoff with Signature Tree Care. Thanks for coming into the studio today, Ian.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be here on such a special day.
It is a big day for the trees. We are talking about trees of Southwest Florida here on Arbor Day. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first question, Ian, it's kind of a simple one, but a lot of people are new to the area. Tell me what makes Florida tree care different from caring for trees up north.
Well, it's kind of a different world down in the subtropics. And you can pretty much move from Virginia to Indiana to California and Louisiana and have a similar understanding of the trees. But moving to South Florida, it's very, very different. It's almost like it's been turned upside down when you're used to working and planting up north.
Yeah. So besides palm trees, what are some of the trees that really do well down here?
Well, there's several native trees. There's the live oaks that everybody knows most commonly, but there's many different types of palms. There's wild coffee for shrubs. There's so many different choices. We have one of the largest varieties of plants available in the states down here in South Florida.
It's unbelievable because some of the things from cooler places can make it down here, and then all of the hot stuff can make it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to palm trees, a lot of them are imported from other parts of the globe. But which palms are actually native to Florida?
Well, sable palms, that's the most common one. Then you've got Parodus palms, Buccaneer palms. There's a host of different palms. There's probably over 1,000 different species of palms. But native to Florida, you were probably rounding them down to around 20 or so.
Really? There's so many of them, though. There's such variation.
Mm-hmm.
So our corner of Florida has seen wildfires recently. So can you tell me a little bit about what impact that can have on people's trees or people who live near the fires?
Sure. Well, fortunately, the native species are more adept to having wildfires move through the area. So they rebound quite well, actually. In fact, they thrive with fires moving through because of the potash that's deposited into the soil. So the native species, you'll see them come back for the most part, unless it was an extremely hot fire. The pines also, they'll bounce back if they've had a certain amount of fire damage. If there's any green on the pines, they will most often bounce back. If they're completely brown, we're going to see some trouble with that. But for the palms, they will show new green shoots within a few days.
Really? They'll be like a little black stub and then all of a sudden they'll have green shoots?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's amazing. But, I mean, what are there other trees that they need to look at? Are there things people need to look for in trees that are non-native to make sure that it hasn't been destabilized by fire? I mean, obviously, if it's burnt to a crisp, it's burnt to a crisp. But, I mean, can their roots be affected by a fire or anything like that?
Sure. Well, with all the native and the non-native species, you still have to look at trees as a potential risk after a fire. But you can evaluate the trees properly and do a tree risk assessment. And in time, you will see which ones are going to bounce back. Now, in consideration with the roots, if the roots have been basically overheated and vaporized, there's really nothing holding them in the ground. So you're going to look for any types of leaning in the trees that was not there before.
Like it starts to lean over?
Correct. And if you see that lean begin to increase, that's definitely something that you want to consider removing.
Yeah, so if you have a tall tree, even though it may look like it's fine, if it starts leaning over, those roots could have been overheated.
Correct.
Well, that's a good thing to keep in mind for people that are living really close to the fires where it gets that hot.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a – is there anything else you need to look for?
If the bark has been scorched so bad, you'll see some of the sap flowing out. It's basically cooked inside. That tree's not going to bounce back. They're very well adapted to fires, but if they've been completely brown all the way to the top of the tree, more than likely it's not going to come back. I'd be a little hesitant about just removing trees altogether for fear of them falling down. There is a process that can be done to mitigate and also pay attention to which ones are going to be more of a risk. Watering is also an important thing. As with anything that gets burned, water is the best thing that you can put on trees to help give them the best chance of coming back.
Mm-hmm. Another issue about living in this part of the world is hurricanes. So what do homeowners need to do to get their trees ready for hurricane season?
Well, it's important to do proper pruning with hurricanes in mind. If they receive improper pruning, you can predispose the tree to potential failures. When I mean improper pruning, that's topping. It's basically just cutting limbs indiscriminately without any plan. And what that does is it causes excessive sprout growth, which makes the tree more dense and heavy once it rains. And then they're more predisposed to failing. Also, the cuts that are made in topping will develop rot. They don't heal over properly. And so after other sprouts have grown back and become larger and heavier, that's a point of failure. So we're kind of creating more of a problem by topping trees.
Just giving them a haircut right across the top?
Right, just cutting them in half and indiscriminately cutting limbs without any plan. Proper pruning would be cutting limbs back to a lateral limb or a parent limb. And the beneficial type of pruning would be structural pruning. And what that is it's looking at the tree structure and eliminating or reducing the weak points or the defects. So you basically go through the structure and you're enhancing the strength of that tree by doing structural pruning. That is the best method of pruning for hurricane preparation.
So like taking off suckers and little small branches?
Well, suckers in some cases could be a sign of stress. So you don't always want to remove suckers just because they're there, because they're probably compensating for a certain type of stress. So you basically are looking for bark inclusions and deformities in the tree where you see two limbs that have grown together and squeezed the bark in between the two limbs. As those limbs begin to become larger and heavier, that's a point of failure during a wind event.
That can knock off one of the two limbs that has been.
Correct.
I gotcha. Mm-hmm. And about palm trees, you have to take down the coconuts, right?
Right. Coconuts can become
cannonballs.
Correct. It's important to remove your coconuts before hurricanes. And as well, it's important not to do what they call a hurricane prune to palm trees. And that was a practice used for many years. And what that is cutting off all the fronds and leaving maybe two or three in the top center. And unfortunately, the bud is the most fragile part of the palm tree. And when you leave just two fronds in the top, that's placing more force on the bud, and that begins to bruise during a high wind event. And oftentimes the tree dies after the storm has moved through just because the bud has been bruised so badly.
Oh, so it looks fine right after the storm, but because those fronds have been moving around a little bit, and you mean where the fronds attach to the trunk?
Correct.
And that gets so bruised and then it doesn't get any nutrition up to the leaves or anything?
Correct. And fungus starts to set in. The palms have evolved for thousands and thousands of years. So they basically, the fronds protect the bud. And so having a canopy of fronds will disperse the bending moment in the bud across the entire palm and not just forced onto that one portion of the bud.
So don't go overboard taking off the fronds in advance of a hurricane, but do take down the coconuts.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's important to leave green fronds on because those are obviously what are photosynthesizing, creating the needed starches for the plant. So if you remove the green fronds, you're reducing the health of the plant. What it does is it produces the starches and stores them in the roots. And so if we're removing green fronds, we're reducing the amount of starches that it can store. So if we get to a point where there's a disease moving through the area, the tree is not going to have the energy reserves to draw on to compensate.
I wanted to ask a question about pruning, too. Up north, my dad, whenever he'd prune a branch off of a tree, he'd put stuff over the, like, I guess I would call it like a wound, you know, mm-hmm. like the little spot. They don't do that down here in Florida.
No, that was a common practice. As we do research and learn new things every day with trees, we found that over the decades of that use with the tar, it actually would compartmentalize moisture into the tree, causing rot. So it did a little more harm than good.
Even up north?
Correct.
I guess I'm aging myself. That's no longer a practice. We are talking about trees in Southwest Florida and how to take care of them with ISA-certified arborist Ian Orlikoff. If you have a question, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Now, natural disasters are, you know, the headline grabbers, but how bad are pests down here for trees?
Well, there is a parallel graph with global trade and pests that have been introduced into the environment. We're getting things from all around the world, and along with that comes the pests. So it's here to stay, and the problem is going to probably only worsen. So it's very important when planning a landscape to develop a plant palette with a lot of diversity. If we use just a handful of plants and many of them, we're more susceptible to having a larger portion of our landscape affected. A monoculture is the worst thing that you can have in the landscape. And so steering away from a monoculture is really the way that in the future we're going to have plants and landscapes that are going to be much healthier.
So you're saying just keep it varied.
Right.
Like, you know,
diversity is the key in a healthy landscape because you're introducing many more beneficial insects that can combat the bad insects.
The bad insects. Mm-hmm. Is there any amount of pesticide that can keep pests away from landscaping?
Well,
I just don't think you can get ahead of it in Florida.
Right. It's a uphill battle, and really it goes from planning, proper planting, healthy and quality nursery stock is very important, diversity, and how it's maintained, putting the proper plant in the proper place. The less stress that the plant has to deal with, the less it's susceptible to pests and disease.
Mm-hmm. So you're a certified arborist by the International Society of Arboriculture, and you're with the Tree Care Industry Association as well. And this is one of the most dangerous jobs that a person can do, trading the number one spot for most dangerous with the crab fisherman we see on Deadliest Catch. So what makes it so dangerous?
Well, it's swinging around with ropes and a chainsaw in your hand is kind of exciting for a young guy, and at the same time, it's extremely dangerous. And safety is something that the industry is really working hard on and has come a long way with those organizations that you just mentioned. And it's a very hazardous job, but we can make it safe by using proper methods and techniques.
We have a call coming in right now. We have Victor and Alva who has a question that he'd like to ask you. Victor, what would you like to say?
Real quick, just what is a native, fast-growing shade tree that would be recommended for, you know, to basically shade my home that wouldn't be destroyed by a hurricane that's strong enough? We currently have two rubber plants, which are now huge trees, and I'm being told to take them down. Now I'll take your response off the air.
All right. Thanks for the question. So we're looking for a shade tree that's large, might provide some shade for the home, that's native.
Okay. I think a very underutilized, large, and beautiful tree that is fairly fast growing. However, no tree is going to be hurricane proof. Proper pruning can help mitigate that. But a satin leaf tree is probably one of my favorite trees for that particular function, a large shade tree.
A satin leaf?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there's the answer on that one. I need to look it up. Now I want to know what it looks like.
Beautiful tree. It's got a brown velvety texture under the leaf, and on the top of the leaf, it's a very glossy green oblong-shaped leaf.
That sounds, and it's a native?
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. We have another call coming in from Dana in Naples. Dana, what would you like to ask?
I was wondering about when a tree service or an arborist comes on your property, do they have to be insured?
That is a really good question, and that's another thing I was going to ask about. Insurance, when an arborist has his own insurance, and where does the homeowner's responsibility come in?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, and I think that's important that every homeowner should ask. Basically, the insurance workman's comp is a very important aspect, and the code for tree trimming for workman's comp is code 0106. And if a tree service is looking at a job and they don't have that code and they happen to have an injury or a death on the property, the homeowner, the liability can fall back on the homeowner. It's important also to get the certificate of insurance made out to your property, and also that every worker is covered under that code, because unfortunately there's people out there that will use a couple of employees under that code, and then they'll use like a lawn care workman's comp code for the rest of them. Workman's comp is very expensive, so people do often try to find ways around that.
Yeah, and in such a dangerous profession, I'd imagine it's really expensive for workers' comp coverage.
Absolutely.
So you need to look out for – you need to look at the insurance papers of the company, make sure all the people that are working on your property are on that coverage, and you needed to look for what code was it?
0106. And also along with the workman's comp is the liability for doing tree work, because say, for instance, lawn care – or planting trees won't cover if a tree falls through a house or on somebody.
Oh, okay. So that makes sense. So we have another question from Stacy and Bonita. Stacy, what would you like to ask?
I just wanted to know, what's the difference between like my lawn service trimming my trees versus having an arborist or a tree service? I thought it was kind of the same thing.
Okay, so that's another good question. Can you point out the difference between a lawn service and an arborist?
Well, an arborist is a tree trimmer or a tree climber. A certified arborist is someone who has actually gone through a level of schooling and takes a test for a certification. That can be done through college or on your own study and take the test. A tree service should have proper equipment to do the different types of jobs and the challenges that come up with doing tree work. Oftentimes, lawn services, if they don't have the proper equipment or the knowledge, are taking chances and putting themselves in harm's way.
So the main difference being a certified arborist is one who's gone to school and is prepared to handle tree illnesses, tree stressors, trimming and pruning and doing things.
Correct. And safety is a big part of it as well. There's been a handful of electrocutions in the past few years, and with more and more lawn services starting to take on tree care, there's certainly some more injuries on the rise, and the industry is working hard to sort of mitigate that through training and classes and conferences that people can attend.
We all have trees out there, and our trees are really tall. I mean, it seems like Florida has even taller trees than most because of the palms being so tall, but it's very dangerous getting up there.
Oh, yes.
So we have Jill in Punta Gorda who has a question. Jill, what would you like to ask?
Hi. I'm wondering about pineapple palms. There's like a little area below the main fronds that sometimes can have green leaves growing out. Some people leave them in, some people take them out. What is recommended?
Okay, so pineapple palm. First of all, what's a pineapple palm?
Probably referring to a canary palm. It's very common that people use that term.
Mm-hmm.
Those are just basically the boots that have been left behind from the trimming process. And it's important to not trim those boots too close to the bud and expose the bud, so they actually do protect the bud, especially to extreme temperature changes if we do have a very cold weather. But the vines are, if it's a fern, that's really not a problem. But if it's something like a ficus tree that had deposited a seed by a bird and is now growing in those boots, it's good to remove those. But just your typical fronds, that's no problem. It's more aesthetic than.
Yeah, it's more aesthetic than anything. So I wanted to ask you, one of the things that your company does, which I was really surprised, is they have a lightning protection. Tell me a little bit about that. What kind of trees would you protect from lightning?
Well, it really depends on which trees are of value to you and that you decide that are important to protect. We have a high rate of lightning down here in Florida, and last year was quite impressive with the amount of trees that I saw that were hit. It's basically a rod that's placed in the top of the tree with a grounding cable attached to the trunk, and there's leads that go down into the ground. And depending on the size of the tree and the ground conditions, you may have one or a couple of the rods that go into the ground to disperse the electricity.
And I wanted to ask you a question. When you get a big tree and you have to take it down because there's just no other recourse, it's ill or it's risking damaging a building or something like that. First of all, does that make you sad when you have to take down a big, beautiful one?
Absolutely. I try to come up with some solutions. If it's a hazard or they're putting on an addition to the house and there's just no other option to work around that, in some cases we do have to take trees down.
So what do you do with the lumber sometimes?
Well, we actually were so disappointed in dumping the lumber and are now turning it into usable wood and making live edge furniture. And it's really a way to sort of add on to the tree's history, because now people can look back in time and see the challenges that the tree had or years of healthy growth and kind of the tree lives on, and it's really nice to appreciate it.
So you make the wood into tables or benches?
Mm-hmm. Tables, benches, stools. And as an arborist, and we do the milling, it's really interesting to see where pruning cuts were made on these trees 10, 15, or 30 years ago and see how they healed over. Or if there was rot, how did the tree respond to that and compartmentalize that rot? So that's kind of the tree geek in me looking for that.
It's a tree geek. That's the guy that you want working on your tea. All right. Well, we have to wrap it up there because we're running out of time. But thanks so much, Ian Orlikoff with Signature Tree Care in Naples. We have links on our website to your website on WGCUnews.org under the Gulf Coast Live tab. And that site has a lot of valuable information on it. So if anybody has any more questions, they can always check there. But for now, we're going to have to wrap things up. Our show today was produced by Matt Smith. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. Thank you.